Hey, it's Brad, host of Your Weekly Calling. Look, Mondays are tough. Your alarm hates you, your coffee betrays you, your boss schedules a meeting at 8:01 like he's Thanos snapping your joy away. That's why I drop a new episode every Monday to help you focus, laugh a little bit, and remember that God's still calling you to more, even if your brain is still in the buffering phase. Trust me, you want this in your ears every Monday. Like and subscribe to Your Weekly Calling because purpose doesn't take weekends off.
Hey everybody, this is Ashley Arpel Steinbach, host of Locks of Laughs, Work Advice for Me, and of course, Movie Torture, aka I am the queen of the Hopecast Network. Or if you ask me, the queen bee. I hope you're all enjoying the amazing shows we have here on the Hopecast Network, and if you are, please don't forget to like and subscribe everywhere that you listen to or watch your podcasts.
This is the Hopecast Network. Stories and shows you actually want to listen to.
We're here.
Absolutely. I'm free.
What is going on?
Listen, God is good. So it's like, it's funny, right? Because you think about it, when we first met over a year ago, I'm behind the wall interviewing you. Then I get blessed to get 41 years taken off, and now I'm here.
What is going on? Okay, well, let's go ahead and introduce this podcast episode. Ladies and gentlemen, this was a surprise episode even for me. We interrupt this regular recording to have just God's abundance on here. Do you know that song? He's a good, good father. Boy, absolutely. If that isn't the case. I was going to introduce you one way, but now, so welcome to the Heart Conviction Podcast. This is episode 14, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself and who I'm sitting here with.
Yes, my name is Sean Robert Johnson, and I just got released from prison yesterday after doing 19 years.
Yesterday, and he's here spending time. I'm with us. I don't know why you want to talk to me. This time is so precious. Dare I call you a good friend? I haven't known you that long, but let me tell you how we know each other. So when the show first started airing, season 9 of 60 Days In, my very first request immediately, I don't even know, I think maybe an episode had been out, and I get a request from somebody who is representing, actually, it might have just been you through Instagram. Was it you messaging or somebody else?
Oh, that was me.
It was you. Okay. From you through Instagram, and you had a podcast from Behind Bars. What was it called?
Prison Audio.
Prison Audio. And I did your podcast right away, and that's how you and I met. And I got a message from you. So we've kept in touch lightly. And then there was a time where you couldn't talk. And then all of a sudden, I get this message from you, and I'm thinking I'm getting a message from you because you can access your Instagram again. Wrong. Well, you can access your Instagram again, but you can access it from outside. So yes. I don't even know where to start. Can you and I just pray? Can I just pray right now?
Absolutely.
Father God, you are just a God of favor and promises and abundance and you're just a good father. You're a good, good father. Thank you so much for your favor on Sean. Thank you so much for seeing him when he felt invisible behind there and honoring his good spirit and will to keep going and to grow and his obedience and his faithfulness to you. Thank you. I cannot believe we're sitting here talking. I thank you, Jesus, for this is a pure miracle. Thank you for your favor on his life. And I pray that everything will be blessed that he does. I pray that he will walk a line that leads directly to you and not be tempted or persuaded by anything in any direction. Thank you for being a good father. Thank you for favor. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm rejoicing with you. I hope you know that, and I hope you feel that. Like, this is wild. Is this not?
Yes. Well, you got to think about it, right? I had a little bit over 19 years in. Mm-hmm. And like I said, my sentence was 60 years.
60.
And the governor took all 41 years. So that's a miracle right there.
You got your life back.
Got my life back. Second chance.
Where do we start? I don't know if we should start at the beginning. I don't know if we should start at what's going on with you now. I don't know where we should even start. Okay, first of all, tell me what you're feeling right now. Like, what did you do yesterday? How did it feel getting out? Like, tell me where you're at right now.
So it definitely felt like a surreal feeling, like going through the whole process of the clemency thing. So let's start there. Let me give you the backstory of that, leading up into, if you don't mind.
Please. So, wait, because I know about you, but other people don't. So I almost feel like you need to tell people how old you... Let's start at the very... Let's just do it. We're so excited. Right. It feels like Christmas morning. Okay. Well, let me say this. First of all, you look great. You look so happy.
Yes.
What was your first meal?
Pizza. I ate some pizza.
What kind of pizza?
First meal. Yeah, because I did just regular plain pizza. I didn't really want to eat too much because eating that processed food for so long, like I didn't want to mess up my system.
Yeah. So, was the pizza
good? And on top of it, the first 10 days of the month, I fast. So I do a 12-hour fast. So I came home in the middle of fast, so I couldn't even eat right away.
Wait, so, you fulfilled your fast?
Absolutely, what? Absolutely, because God got me out of there, and I got to stick to the principles of what I was doing in there when it comes to that.
You're going to make me cry. What in the world? That's amazing. Okay, so you had pizza. How was it?
That was good. Definitely good. Tasted like free pizza. Definitely good.
Okay, so how old were you when you got sentenced?
When I first got arrested, I was 19. Mm-hmm. By the time I got sentenced when I was in the county, I was 21. So 21, that's when they gave my sentence, 60 years.
Tell us a little about the charges.
All right, so it happened from two incidents. Uh-huh. One was attempted murder incident. One was a murder incident that both was in self-defense. Uh-huh. And, you know, a couple people tried to stack the books against me, try to change a couple little facts, everything. So it is like, it didn't look like it, even though the evidence showed it in so many ways. Uh-huh. So I ended up getting found guilty by the trial, by the jury in June of 2008. And then I got sentenced 2 months later after that.
Guilty on both?
Guilty on both of them. And the four gun charges, because it was like two gun charges applied to each one of them.
I see. Why did they happen back to back? Was that just coincidence or were they involved with each other?
No, they was both connected in some type of way. You know, just being young and just being into the streets, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of things happen. So some things led to another. Right. And then those two incidents had happened.
Were you what? Involved with what? Street stuff, gang stuff? No.
Yeah, it wasn't. They tried to make it gang related because of my affiliation then, but it really didn't have anything to do with any affiliation. It was just a group of guys and another group of guys that just didn't like each other. And it didn't even involve me in the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. it just involved people that I associated with.
So it wasn't really just you. It was a whole thing.
Yes, it was like a whole ordeal.
Were you rightfully convicted or wrongfully convicted?
I would say rightfully in the sense of I took responsibility for my action.
Yep.
Right? Shot somebody else unfortunately died in both incidents. So I rightfully owned that up as soon as I got arrested. Mm-hmm. But I would say the wrongfully side is that 60 years for something like that, that was a crazy thing, especially when they knew it was evidence and they knew it was people that testified that corroborated with my self-defense.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a gun situation. They were shooting, you were shooting, everyone's shooting.
Yes.
And then you are part of that shooting. You're not the only person shooting. Nope. And in all that, deaths happened. And then you get charged for it.
Yes. And I got arrested.
Did other people get charged too?
I'm the only one.
See, that's where things get messy, right?
Yeah. Like, a couple other people that they was interest, they kind of like, nah, it was just him, so just save they sell. So I'm like...
Were you given instruction by other people to shoot in this situation?
Nah, it was just me just defending my life. Like, being in the streets, of course, you know, at that time, 19 years old, had a gun. But it wasn't like I was, like, purposely going out like, okay, let me go do this. I was just trying to just defend me. And it just unfortunately happened the way that it did.
That's a hard one. That's a messy one. I mean, it's almost like, man, should you be punished for being a part of that group? Sure. where's the punishment? If they start shooting, can you not shoot back? Does self-defense not apply to gang member? I mean, we could ask all these questions, right? We could go on forever. And maybe that's another episode, but these ones are sticky. These ones get hard.
Yes.
And then where are you? You're from where? New Jersey?
Yes, New Jersey.
And all this happened in New Jersey?
Yeah, Asbury Park, New Jersey. That's where I happened at.
When you were 19, did you have any direction? Or like, you're so focused now and you're so like a better version of yourself. Were you like that at 19, or were you lost?
Well, it was like aspects of it even at that age, mm-hmm. but I felt like growing up, my main thing was basketball. Mm-hmm. But then when a lot of stuff happened, like in the home dynamic, that just led me going to where I went to in the street.
That's usually how it
goes. So it was like, I knew some things, and prison just made me just lock in and be more disciplined and just not allow the distractions around me to cause me to lose my focus of what I want to accomplish.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume once you're in prison for so long, it's like you either melt and die or you cling to something decent, right? Learn, grow.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay. So then tell me, what was getting sentenced like? What was that first night of it happening when you're like, I'm going to get charged for murder? What does that feel like?
Once I became a suspect, I was like, yeah, I just kind of messed up my life. Right. So I was like, I had a thought to myself, like, I just messed up my life. And then I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, I know it's a self-defense case, but are they going to use the facts of that? Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll do 10 years, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, if they don't, I could potentially lose my life to the system. So it was just like a back and forth thought.
Had you been like, let's say it had been like a month before you turned 18, do you think you would have got sentenced differently, or they still sentence those guys pretty hard?
No, I think when I was in the prison, there was some guys that was down there like 16, 17, 18 that ended up getting a lot of time too.
16-year-olds in prison?
Yes. Like everybody was an adult, but they're like, what they do is they just wave you up as an adult, charge you as an adult, and wait till you get over 18 to actually send you down to a state prison.
I see. Mm. Okay. And then you get sentenced. And what does that feel like?
When it came to the sentence, honestly, once I lost trial, I wasn't even focused on what they was going to sentence me to. I'm just like, it doesn't matter if they give me 50 years, 60 years, life in prison. To me, it's all the same thing. It's like virtual life. So I was just sitting there thinking like, okay, I lost trial. I got to get down to prison and do everything I can to work on my case to get back.
I see. So you've been working on your case this whole time?
Yes, I've been working on the case the whole time, filing affidavits that people submitted saying that it was in self-defense, that actually was witnesses and all that stuff. But it's just a journey, because when they deem certain cases more high profile than others, it's really not even about the case or the facts anymore. It's just about, let's just deny them on this part of the appeal so that way he just stay in prison.
Yeah, because
so I went through that for years.
They don't really care, right?
No.
I think what I'm learning, and I'm very transparent about this, since the show, I have learned that I don't have a dog in this fight if I don't learn. There's so much to learn, so many different key parts of somebody getting sentenced and getting all the things, and I'm trying to learn. And what I'm learning is your only hope, if you want resentenced, is your case has got to fall in the lap of somebody who cares. And yes, that's it. That's your only shot.
That's it.
That's your only shot in this. And that's really it. The fight is like, can you get your case in the hands of somebody who cares? And the people who care are minimal, and they're overwhelmed with caring.
Yes. I agree.
Right? Okay.
I agree.
So then you get sentenced to what prison?
New Jersey State Prison. So that's the only maximum security prison here in New Jersey.
What's the top maximum security kind of prison? Max?
Yes, top is the max, and that's the prison I was at.
You were at a max security prison?
The whole time.
Is that the worst kind of prison to get sent to?
Yes, and any state, no matter what state you're in, the maximum security prison, that's the worst one you can get in. They gotta have maximum security prisons, mm-hmm. Then they have medium security prison. Then they have the minimum. And then they also have the mixture. They have like the medium minimum or the medium max, whereas like you'll have some people that used to be in max custody, but they belong in the medium. This one I was in was 100% match.
What are like the camps?
The camps is almost similar to a halfway house. It's like the transitional part of you still belong to the DOC, but you have a little bit more freedom. You're able to sleep in a trailer. So that's like the little below the minimum.
You want people want that, right? That's like a
yes
to get that.
Yes.
So you get sentenced to max. And I feel like we all kind of sort of know what max means, but what does max really mean?
Yeah, that means you're down there with everybody that has a similar situation. It's like they just deeming us the worst of the worst.
So you were in there with mostly what?
You in there with people, even my year. It's crazy. Like when I first went down there and I get on quarantine, I'm next door to a guy that I know. And he asked me, say, yo, how much time you got sentenced to? And I'm like, man, they just sentenced me to 60 years. He said, well, yeah, you know, they sentenced me to 300 years. So I felt bad that, like, I got 60. I don't want it, but I'm like, this guy just got 300 years.
Because you're thinking, so, if I got 60, I'm 19, you could still get good time, right?
The way the law changed over here, I would say like the late 90s, early 2000s, they got the NARA, which is the No Early Release Act. So they changed the law that you have to do a mandatory 85% of the time.
Okay.
So the 60 years I had received, the mandatory minimum I had to do was 51 years.
Okay. So you're thinking best case scenario, I'll get 51 years and I'm 19. So maybe I'll get out when I'm 70.
Yep. Maybe.
But like you said, that's life.
That's basically life.
I use this loosely, especially in this conversation. When I was in jail, I was thinking about the other people who were in there, because when you're like 2 weeks in and you're not used to that, I think when you're used to it, it's better. But I'm thinking to myself, I cannot believe people have been sitting here for, you know, 9 months waiting for sentencing, all these things. Time is insane. It's a mind thing you can't even understand. I was thinking about the girls who got sentenced there for like 13 months or 14 months or 15 months. And I thought, coming into like the first week of a 15-month sentence has got to feel like the heaviest, yuckiest, sickest, like just, I would think about that for hours because we had all this time to think, right? I can fathom it though. I can fathom getting sentenced to 13 months and sitting there. What I can't fathom is getting sentenced to prison. I don't even know how to get my brain there. And you're sitting there and you're told you're probably going to be here a majority of your life. How do you sit with those feelings in the beginning?
I think everybody take it differently. Like some people take it harder than others, but I always had like a resilient spirit. So to me, like I said, once they said, okay, you lost trial, at that point, it wasn't even about how much time. It's about what can I do to make sure I don't do that amount of time. And like when I first got to prison, it's crazy because I met God that like, oh, I've been here 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I used to be in my mind like, man, I'm not even going to be here that long. So I'm good. Mm-hmm. And then,
so you always knew?
Oh, I always trusted God that some way, somehow it was going to happen.
Wow.
But then like 15 years in, the younger guys that's coming in and I'm trying to educate them. And I think like that was like a difference of a shift that like people that came in around the time I did,
yeah,
we tried to educate the younger guys that was coming in to like get on top of your case immediately.
Yeah.
Because people before us that came in, they used to tell us like they came in and they used to just live in prison, not worry about their case. So some of them turned 15 year bids where they could have been home early under the old law into 30, 40 years.
I see. So you're saying if you're incarcerated, fight your case. If you have it. If you
have a case, you're going to know your case better than anybody else because people can assist you with it, but you know all the things that happen at trial. You know all the things that happen behind the scene that won't be in your transcripts. So it's like those things can play a major part in hopefully getting your reversal, especially when you're in this type of situation.
They say that the odds of an appeal, and odds of having an appeal in your case are so low, like something like 2%.
Yes.
Is that true?
No, it's true. When I first got sentenced and I went to the prison in 2008,
yeah,
I would say from 2008 maybe to about 2015-ish, we would be happy if we heard that one person got their case overturned in the entire year. just one person. And you got to remember, you talking about at least about a population of 1,500 people. So just one person. And then like the law started changing a little bit in 2015. Then you started getting a couple in a year.
Yeah.
And then when we got into 2019, 2020, opened up a little bit more. So then you started getting maybe a couple in a month. And then it started going like weekly that you'll hear like one or two people that got reverses on the case.
Yeah.
And then once that segmented to parole opening up, because that was another thing. It was people that had the ability to get parole. But if you was in New Jersey State Prison, they would automatically deny you just because you're there. Because in their mind, they would say, you have to be doing something wrong that you're still in this prison after all this time. Instead of just the fact that the prison don't want to ship nobody out.
That's
they
want to keep people there. And they're making money off you.
Absolutely. $50,000 a year.
How much?
$50,000 a year. That's how much they make off of us.
That's it? I thought they made more.
No, it might be more by now, but the last time I checked, it was about $50,000 a year off of each person.
Yeah, I mean, that's at the end. That's once all your stuff's paid for, they're making profit, yeah. $50,000.
So when you got all that stuff going on, and then the blessing when the clemency came with the governor that we got, Phil Murphy, is like he changed the dynamics of everything with this clemency.
Yeah.
Because he's been trying to implement certain things into law to help us out over his tenure being a governor. Like the law of the emerging offender, if you was under 26, that your brain is not fully developed, you shouldn't get a lot of this time, but legislation didn't want to pass it through. So he put all of this stuff into the clemency. And now it's the blessing that a lot of us are being free because of this clemency.
So he's saying that before 26, your brain's not developed. I stand by that. And so he's trying to what? Get an act for that?
No, well, they came out across the country a couple of years ago about there was people at universities, and they were saying that if you're under 26, they did a study, your brain is not fully developed.
Interesting.
So you should not be charged as an adult.
Is this the
anywhere
governor,
from that time.
Is with Mickey? Is it Mickey? Is that the governor's name?
Oh, no. Mikey Sherrill is the one that's coming in, but is Governor Phil Murphy right
that's
now.
That's who's right now.
Yes.
Governor Phil Murphy. Interesting. I'm blown away by this because they do have the power to do a lot. People just don't care about the incarcerated.
They don't
see them. They don't care. Did you guys ever see politicians or government officials in the prison often or no?
No, like they had come through, mm-hmm. but the days that we know they had come, we wouldn't personally see them. They had like have them do a tour in certain parts of the prison and like try to deviate the population part where we could have access to talk to them, but they would just let us know that they coming in. So they're kind of like locked down the facility.
I see.
But when I got my sentence commuted, the governor himself is actually the one that told me. So that was like the first interaction I had with him that he told me that he was commuting my
sentence. That is so incredible. Okay. So how did you know that you were even an option for this?
All right. So when they first put out everything for the clemency, they was talking about the stream trial tax. They sent us on JPay, which is the kiosk emailing system we have in prison, mm-hmm. for anybody that don't know mm-hmm. that. And I looked at the criteria. So my brain automatically said extreme trial tax will only apply to us that's in the situation. Because if you're in a medium facility or a minimum, you don't have extreme trial tax because you only got 5 years, 10 years. So
what are you calling it? Extreme?
Yes, it's called extreme trial tax.
Extreme trial tax. And what does that mean?
Yes. So the premise of that is if you went to trial and you got way more than what you should have gotten for that charge or what your plea offer
was. Oversentenced.
Yes,
which happens
basically.
A lot.
And this is why the governor started the clemency thing, because he said it's so many people that it's an injustice for it. So, like, originally, my plea offer was 18 years before I went to
Your
trial.
Your plea offer was 18 years.
My plea offer was 18
so
years for both charges.
So, you were given a plea for 18 years, and you think, well, I'm not going to take it. I'm going to fight it. And then instead, you get 60.
Yes.
Did that make you want to, like, shoot yourself or what?
No, because I wanted to go at it for what I believed in, because I felt like, if they came down to a plea offer for 18, but they try to make it this big, notorious case, I felt that they just wanted me to cop out just to get me to do some time.
Yeah, pleas are interesting. I don't think that I don't love them. And I know there's other people who don't love them too because they don't make sense.
Yeah, they don't. But see, this is the interesting thing. Even though I lost trial and got 60 years, mm-hmm. I always look at it and look at like this way. If you offer me 18 years, right. What different evidence that you get from the time you offer me 18 years until the time I went to trial that you say you want to give me an extra 42 years just because I exercise my constitutional right?
You get punished for it.
Yes, we get punished for going to trial. Like that's it's right. Guys right now that are thankful outside of myself for the clemency because this guy that got offered 5 years.
Yeah.
And they got sentenced to 80 years. It was like one guy that they released 2 weeks ago, his name Rashawn Carter. He got sentenced to 107 years.
Yeah.
And he got free. So it's definitely a blessing.
Okay, so this is called, what did you call it?
What, extreme trial tax.
Extreme trial tax. Why are they calling it tax?
Because they basically saying they taxed us for not taking a plea and we went to trial. We exercised our constitutional right to go to trial and we got taxed for it.
Okay. Okay, I don't know about this. See, that's what I'm saying. I don't think people do. Even if I'm studying, right now I'm studying the incarceration system, all of it, how they're connected, where the funding comes from. It's hard to follow. This is why people have to go to school, how to do prison administration, because it's so difficult. I'm following this, right? I could know it up and down, right? I could be getting a degree in it. It doesn't mean that I know that this is going on where you are. This is incredible. So
yeah, if you look it up, you got the chance. Just look up New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy Clemency Project, and it'll pop up.
Clemency Project. Okay.
And if you look up specifically like the date he announced mine was November 25th. So you look that up, and it said in the sixth round of clemency, and then they have like the list of names of everybody he pardoned and commuted his sentence.
So did you have to apply for it, or were you told that you qualified for it?
No, we all had to apply for it based off the criteria. So it was four criteria. One was you had to go to trial. And the second one was you got sentenced more than 15 years. Mm-hmm. The third one was you got sentenced more than double what your plea offer was if you had a plea offer. And then the fourth one was, do you have at least your plea offer in 20 years in or 130 of time in?
Interesting. And this is going on just because of your governor?
Yes. He has been doing an amazing job with this. He actually signed it into law last year on Juneteenth. He signed into law, so he got the ACLU involved, Princeton University involved. Wow. Mr. Joseph Kakor, he's the one that actually represented me from the Princeton University.
Yeah.
So what they do is they get lawyers and then they work together with some students to do the petitions. Mm-hmm. I already had my petition done, so he just added more to it and then submitted that his name was on it. So he did an amazing job with that. And just like once you submit it in, you just waiting for the Executive Clemency Advisory Board, because that's what our governor did. He formed a board of impartial individuals to review the cases, the petitions. And then once they review them, they will send it to his team. Once his team review them, they can either choose to see you or not see you, but then they write a recommendation for the governor of what they believe should happen for you. And then the governor, he'll make his decision to sign off on
this
it.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, really, this should be happening all over. People who are working on incarceration reform, this is why they're working towards it. So how many people do you think in your facility applied for or qualified for it?
I would think, I'm saying maybe about 300-400 people apply for
it.
All together, it was 4,000 petitions. Because it's not only for people that's incarcerated, it's also for people that's in the streets too. Because you can get your parole commuted, your suspended license commuted, whatever the case may be. But in a prison I was in, I would say maybe 300-400 people, if that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people from the beginning didn't believe in it. Like, they were just like, oh, these guys are just mm-hmm. saying this just to say it. But then now they are actually seeing a lot of us walking out of prison and getting that blessing. Yes. Is like, They more people are starting to file their petitions.
Let me tell you what is going to be said from this, because until you understand the amount of injustice, corruption, and just just wrong that goes on in jails until you get a glimpse of it. And I do believe you can get it from the television shows. I do. If you care enough and you watch the television shows and you see what happens, there's so many of them. I do think that you can see a glimpse of it. Or if you listen to podcasts like yours or topics like this, until then, people don't care or they just don't know. And they would say, well, why would I don't have anybody incarcerated. Why would I care? And people are pretty inherently selfish. And until you take an interest in the incarcerated, you won't really care. So if there's going to be two things that'll happen. Somebody would hear a topic like this and just not really care. It doesn't apply to them. They don't have a lot of criminals in their life or people who have been sentenced or incarcerated. What would you say to that person who even might just be listening to this because they listen to my podcast and they're kind of halfway checked out because, you know, prison's not their thing? What would you speak to that person?
I would just say, if you put your own personal feelings about incarceration into a side, because yes, we all want to believe if a person do a crime, then they should get whatever they deserve. But it's a difference from a person being held accountable for an action that they did versus being punished way farther than what they should be. So, and I think that's the fine line that people just got to learn how to just be humans and have sympathy. Because it's like, if I understand if you're not in that situation, you're not in that environment, but you never know what can happen in your life that happened to somebody around.
Well, and they feel confident that they would not. They would be like, well, I wouldn't get it. I'm here to tell you personally, and I'm speaking a little too much, you'd be surprised how quick you can catch a charge.
No, I agree. Listen,
you'd be surprised.
Maybe in the 90s, we had a governor over here, and she's the one that implemented the 85% for the narrow. Not too long after that, her daughter got arrested and she tried to change it, but her daughter had to serve her time.
Wow. That's right. That's a good example. So to that person, I would speak to them too. This is what I would say. Somebody, the chaplain at the program director at the Charleston County Jail in South Carolina, she said something that stuck with me forever. She said, you might not think that you care about those who are incarcerated, but people within your society have been incarcerated. It's people you walk past in the grocery store. It's people in your church. It's people at your job who don't want you to know. It's people in your neighborhood. Like, you must care about community. And the second people start caring about community, that's when things change. When you care about the humans that are in your demographic, like in your little region, then that's when things change. And she was like, there are people in your radius of where you live that are incarcerated and will be incarcerated. And you should care about that alone, because then they affect everything in our society, our culture, our businesses, the way things run, our crime, or all those things. And that's what I would say to those people. Like, I understand it's easy. We can't care about everything. And how do you all of a sudden just decide out of nowhere without it being a passion project that you care about the incarcerated? I'm struggling with that now. How do I get people to care about the incarcerated if they don't care?
How? No, it's a tough fight. It's a tough fight, but it's like, I think the more that everybody contribute to educate the population in the world about it, whether you've been in my situation of being incarcerated for the time I have or not, or been in your situation where you've been a participant in it, or even if a person that haven't, but just having the awareness of knowing and being educated, I think that can go a long way. Just sharing more testimonies and more stories.
Yeah, like at a very, very, very minimum, just know the stats of your local jail. That's it. Know the stats. Know who's coming in and out. Look at what the process looks like. Maybe listen to a few things like this. Look up in the news what's going on in incarceration. Just have a concept and see if anything within that could be something that you could contribute to. Now, if I really want to get crazy, and we're getting ready to talk about this on the show in different segments, my podcast, and maybe you can be a part of it now, I am going to make a call to churches to get plugged back into the incarceration system, because at one point they were heavily involved. When I was growing up, all the churches were plugged into the jails, and I don't see that anymore. I think we're way too more concerned about our coffee bars in church, and I don't even know.
True, but I also think sometimes the facility play a major part and try to discourage churches from helping
that's
out.
That's right.
Like, that's one thing I can identify, like going through that experience, they will make it as hard as they
could.
Like, shout out to the pastor that's at the church, right? My pastor, Reverend Dr. Andre McGuire. He is a true man of God because they will, sometimes we have programs and they know it's supposed to be called out at 12 o'clock. They will purposely not call it out to like 1 o'clock or 1:30. So it's not a lot of people that go there.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. So it's like they play a major part, but then you get some people that's in position that might be a CEO that might be of the same faith. So they try to help it out, but it can go either way. So I don't think it's always just the outside. I think the prisons have a lot to play with.
Oh, I agree. It's definitely their fault in a lot of aspects of it. Okay, so then there's that person. Now, what person would you speak to? Who? And also, I love that you gave a shout out to your reverend. What's his name?
Reverend Dr. Andre McGuire.
Do you think he would come on this podcast?
Oh, yes. I think he would.
Do you have his contact information?
Yes, I will reach out to him and ask.
Okay, ask him. I would love to have him on. But what would you say to the person? Because I'm going to tell you what mindset I had just in bail bonds. This is my mindset.
Okay.
It's almost embarrassing because my heart is so different now. But my mindset was, if you don't want to run risk of going to jail, don't break the law. Right? Don't come close to it. Don't hang with people who break the law. Don't go to people's houses who are constantly in and out of jail. Don't date people who are in jail. That would have been my thought. My once upon a time mindset would have been, it's really easy to not go to jail. And I see on all of the A&E videos of the clips of 60 Days In, when people don't know that the show is undercover, that's a lot of the comments. People are like, well, if you don't want to be in jail, don't break the law. I mean, that's tons of the comments. What would you say to that person?
I think it's easier said than done because in life, we all are like one decision away from being incarcerated in some type of way. Like, you never know the circumstance. You never know how you're feeling. Like, you could be a person that, like, just live life the right way every day. And then something can happen in your life and that has drained you in a whole different way. And then somebody say something to you, you just snap on that person.
That's right.
And you don't got to kill a person. You could just get in a fight. You could find yourself in prison.
That's right.
And it's like watching A&E, like, you would see some of the craziest situations that lead to people being in prison. Might want to protect somebody that you love, might be a family member, whatever the case may be, but you never know. You could actually be driving and look at your phone, kill somebody, and now you find yourself in prison.
That's
so we all are like one decision away. So I don't think that's just something is easier said than done to say, oh, just don't do this so you won't be in jail. You never know what life can throw at.
That's right. There's this lady that I follow who writes really famous murderers in jail, and she always asks them, when did you go from kind of being this regular person to being, you know, like the high profile cases to being a murderer? And they always say it just was one thing that shifted or switched in their life, an attitude, an opinion, a relationship, something. And then they kind of went on this other side of being able to do this. So it's really circumstantial. What I would speak to that person who talks like that now, which was me not all that long ago, less than a few years ago, I would say, yes, there are the people who just blatantly choose crime. And I believe that those people are handled fairly accordingly. There's a lot of people, though, who truly have lived a life infested by trauma. Miserable childhoods. All the girls that I was in jail with, I would say over 90% had all had sexual abuse as a kid. Pure trauma, functioning out of trauma, functioning out of survival. Lots of other people around them incarcerated, like not well, like they didn't know better, like so environmental where getting in trouble is just unavoidable. It's just like not if, but when it's your turn, when it's your time, it'll happen to you. And we're talking about generational curses, mindset, spiritual battles, people's self-esteem, how people view themselves, see themselves, lack of education, lack of good people in their lives. I would say that now. I didn't realize how desperate all those people were in there for true biblical mind renewal. And how can you function differently from something you've really never had?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So now take me to the part of your story, which I'm so excited about. When did you find out that either you were going to get clemency or you were potential for it?
That was the first time that I believe, like, operating in faith, I believe it was going to happen the whole time. Right. And that's just being 100% honest. And shout out to one of my Nip brothers, too. His name, Charles Johnson. He actually got his clemency granted like maybe a week before. I'm about to tell you what happened. So we used to pray together every day. Us and our other Nip brother, Saladin Thompson, we would just pray. And it's like a core group of us. Just mentioning names, Minister Rashid Walker, Minister Dewan Dennis, Louis Ramos. I'm going to get to him in a minute. And Daniel Lawrence. So it's like seven of us. We pray. Yeah. And we just been operating in faith like God is going to do it. Mm-hmm. So then they seen my brother Charles first. The governor team actually came in and seen him. So once they seen him, I said, okay, let me start downsizing. Because like the Holy Spirit is telling me, like, listen, you're going to be soon. So I started downsizing everything in the cell I was
acting
in
over faith.
The course. Acting in faith. So we praying. So it was... No, the day after the election that they had for the governor election here, which was November 4th, November 5th, the next day, they had called Charles down there and he did an interview. No, he spoke to the governor's team and they told him that the governor was commuting his sentence. So we all celebrated for him. So Monday, November 10th, they made the announcement publicly who was getting their time commuted. Tuesday was a holiday.
What does the announcement look like? Online?
Yes, it's on Twitter.
Twitter? The way they're all using Twitter now, I don't know if I'm just like officially like old and it bugs me, but like, okay, they'll use it like a government official. Okay.
So they do it for that. Yeah. So then that was November 10th. They did an announcement. November 11th was a holiday. Mm. November 12th, we was expecting him to leave because they commuted 30 years off of his sentence. Mm. So now he had like a year and a half left. So we know he's leaving the prison. When Wednesday morning arrives, no, Tuesday night, me and him, we made a meal. And I told him, I said, yo, this is going to be the last time we're going to eat a meal again. The very next morning, the governor team came and seen me. And we was praying on it. So when they came and seen me, at that point, I'm like, yeah, it's over. It's definitely over. So that was November 12th. And then it was November Friday, November 21st. So after I did the interview with two of the governor's team, Ryan and Lee, you know, we interviewed for like an hour. They asked me more questions about the petition. Mm-hmm. But you kind of know once they come see you, it is a positive thing. So on the 21st, they called me down there again and they said the administrator wanted to speak to me. So they got the video set up and the governor himself actually popped up on the screen. And he, like, the conversation, it is, like, it's a conversation I'm ever going to remember. It's 10:20 in the morning on November 21st. So he's like, Sean, good morning. How you feeling? I'm like, I'm just blessed. You know, God woke me up this morning. So he says, well, you know, I'm about to make your day even better. I'm commuting your whole sentence. So when he said that, I, like, all I could do is just say thank you and just be thankful to God for it. And then he was just explaining that he personally wanted to let me know that he was commuting my sentence because they was going over my petition for a while and they just seen the growth throughout my journey of everything I accomplished between the books, the motivational speaking, the podcast and all that. So they seen my growth. And then also through the support letters, they seen how I have impacted others in the world too. So they were just like, he's like, I'm just going to commute the rest of your sentence off. And then he was going to make the announcement on November 25th, that Tuesday. So that was like a long 4 days waiting for
it. What did that feel like though? Were you?
Yeah, well, I was just thankful. You know, once I got back to the cell, I was praising God for that. Me and my guys, we was just praising God for that. And then Tuesday hit, the announcement hit, and then the parole people came back again. Cause I seen them that same day, but the final parole papers I needed to sign, they came, I signed on that day and they said, yeah, you'll be home December 4th.
So, what did like, you that feel like going to bed that night? Could you even sleep?
No. From the 25th all the way until I went home yesterday, I probably was like operating off of like 5 hours of sleep. You're like, I couldn't sleep.
I mean, I'd be freaking out. So right now, it just in the event of the rare event that he would see this or he doesn't, what do you want to say? What would you say to that governor?
Oh, I just want to, I would say thank you, because he definitely blessed me with giving my life back in a second chance. And I appreciate the thoroughness that they went through my petition to see what I accomplished. Yes. But I'm just thankful that, you know, God touched his heart to bless me in a way that it's a miracle. And not only for me, because it's been other people that have been going home. And then I know his term doesn't end until the 20th of January. And I know he's going to be more people that should either be going home or be close to be going home. So I'm just appreciative to him for everything that he's done for me personally, but everything that he's doing for everybody else.
That's right. Is he a man of faith?
Yes,
he is.
What's
his name?
Governor Phil Murphy.
Governor Phil Murphy, I just want to say that you are a forerunner in the incarceration reform. I didn't even know that this was going on. And you are changing the game, sir, from what it sounds like. I will be following this on you now and your career. And we are wildly impressed by your obedience to Christ, because you are really showing. It makes me so emotional.
Yeah.
You are showing like the forgiveness and the grace of the Father. He's a God of second chances. This is what the Father's about. He's about second chances and restoration and forgiveness and hope. And he believes in us. He believes in us even when he knows we're going to mess up again. And I'm so touched by this.
Yes, because like his whole stance was he wanted to leave an impact and leave his imprint in as a governor. Yeah. And his exact words was that he was going to do something that's going to be revolutionary to the state.
So,
and he know that it'd been a lot of injustices. So he wanted to correct that before his tenure was up, because this is his last year. And, you know, he's definitely are blessing us in so many ways by just freeing us and restoring us to our families. So that's just a blessing in itself. And like even the church that, you know, I was a part of in the prison, like we was praying for years that we would just have a mass exodus of leaving out of that prison.
Come on.
And like now is manifesting into reality. And like, that's the overall blessing right there, how God worked. So
I can't handle stuff like that. You know, I'm a crier. I don't know if you know that, but I can't handle stuff like that. Man, that's so powerful. God shows up. Does he not?
Show up.
What was your last night in jail like?
The last day, I woke up that morning, I would say around 3 o'clock in the morning. Like normally I used to wake up around like 4:30 in the morning and to get my morning devotion in. So I woke up around 3, and then, you know, I was just thanking God, knowing that in 24 hours it was over. So I just did my devotion and just went about my day the way I would normally do it. But I just made sure I didn't take a nap during the day. I wanted to stay up so I could crash out by the end of the night.
Well, and how were all your goodbyes to everybody?
Oh, it was a celebration. That's like one thing I would say. God has really shifted the atmosphere of that prison. Really? Like so many people throughout the years, especially me being there since 2008, so many people lost hope. Mm-hmm. So now that people are seeing what God is doing, it's like, have hope now. Like, okay, I could be home or I could be close to being home, but I will at least be out of this prison.
Yeah.
So like everybody, you know, it's like a standing ovation.
Yes.
And then a lot of people was like, because of they being around me for as long as they have, they were just proud of me for my growth. And it was like, you are definitely one of the people that deserve it for everything that you accomplished and poured into the prison population.
That's right.
Throughout my time.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. And then tell me what it looked like when you got let out of those doors. I know.
It was a blessing. It was me and one other guy. We was walking out together. And I was like, by the time they called for me and I knew I was taking my last walk through those prison hallways, and then you get to the front, I had to change into the outfit that they give us, the white t-shirt and the blue jeans. And I'm just sitting there like they try to rush everything else. They need to rush this.
I know.
They need to rush this. So we sat there for about 45 minutes before we had to sign the last documents we needed to sign. Yeah. And then they just looked at us like, y'all free, and let us out the same door that they brought us in.
Yes.
They let us out the same door, the same
and
way.
And who was waiting for you?
My mother was there. Oh. My son was there.
How old's your son?
And both of my brothers was
How
there.
How old's your son?
So, my son is 21. He was 2 years old when I got incarcerated. So it was like, it was definitely a joyous moment. I actually got a, I got video of it. So I'll send you a
Will
copy
you please?
Of the video.
I want to post it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. And where, what does life look for you today? Where are you at? What's next?
Oh, so, you know, today is only day two of me being home. I'm adjusting everything. Like the last 2 days, I've been dealing with some motion sickness getting in the car. So I'm like, you know, being locked up for so yeah. long, you don't get outside of that prison building and maneuver around or being in a vehicle. You know, I definitely got a little motion sickness, but I've been accomplished everything. I got 5 years of supervision. I'm not even worried about that. I went and seen them yesterday. Then I just chilled with the family. On top of that, today I went and got my ID. I'm trying to get my parole. Yeah, I got to handle business. Main thing. So right now I'm just waiting for my parole to get switched out to Texas. So, you know, I could get out there with the wife and just live life.
You have a wife in Texas. That's yes, right. What part is she life. In?
Houston.
Wow. Houston. And then your plan is to live in Texas.
Yes. So the paperwork is already submitted. Once the paperwork goes through, I'll be out in Houston, Texas.
You know, maybe we could work on incarceration reform together when you're in Texas, because I'm in Dallas.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You know, I'm all for it. Like, I didn't live there for the last 19 years. So, you know, I got like the inside scoop of how everything goes.
Yes.
And I believe with both our brains and both of us working toward the common good and with our faith, I think God will definitely use us in a mighty way to accomplish a lot of things.
I believe that too. Even the fact that you reached out to me. I mean, I read your message and I was like, wait a minute. Like, you just got out. You're talking to me? Like, what? Like, I was so thankful you told me. And I was like, wow, that really means something to me. You know, just our like one conversation in person on your podcast and our just, you know, small conversations in between. I thought, well, I like that. Thanks for thinking about me in your like celebratory state. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you and a couple of people that I was able to connect with when I even did my podcast that was from the show or from Love at the Lockup. Yeah. Like, y'all have been good to me. So I don't change.
No.
So, you know, I want to show y'all that all of y'all the same courtesy and the same love that y'all showed me when I originally reached out to y'all. So I just wanted to let y'all know that I was home because I knew that it would be a genuine celebration on y'all behalf.
Yes.
Because
I wrote a letter for you.
You've been good to me.
Yeah. You Absolutely. Guys asked me to write a letter. I wrote the letter for you. Now, I don't know that it meant much, but I did it for you. You know, okay, so let me tell you where I want to start is in this whole incarceration thing, it's hard to know where to start if you want to do reform. It feels like this huge beast and they don't care about anybody or anything and they don't care until heat's on them. And it was hard to know where to start. So I've just started where I've been. I had some really interesting things happen in Charleston, South Carolina. That's where I was when you and I interviewed for your podcast. And I'm based though predominantly out of Dallas, Texas. So I am now working on Dallas County Jail. And then Daniel from the show is going to work on the Justice Center in Cincinnati. And that's all I know to do to start with is to just investigate these systems, see if they have proper programs and religious services, and to talk to people who are in there and to figure out where the injustices are. And then hopefully go up from there. So then I'll go to the next closest jail. We already solved some things in Charleston County Jail. It was incredible. And I was just there for the summer. It was like, I can't believe in this just couple weeks that I'm here, how much good was implemented from us just meeting with them. So maybe you can help us investigate these jails once you get.
I'm all for whatever I could do to contribute, you know, to make it better in whatever way to shed light on it. I'm for it.
Okay. Well, I think you and I are going to have some work to do together. Is that drive, look, when I was just locked up for 2 months, that drive out of that jail, it was the most magical, surreal moment imaginable. What was your drive like?
Well, as soon as I got out, you know, seeing my family and everybody got a hug. I changed it to some clothes because I definitely wanted to get out of them clothes for the last time. Yes. And then, you know, they wanted to take pictures. I'm like, nah, let's get away from this prison. Now, I want to get away from here as fast as I can. So, you know, but just leaving knowing that I was blessed to walk out of a place that they told me I would never walk out of.
Right.
That was a blessing, and I just put it behind me.
Man, yeah, I get that. I get that for sure. What was last night like for you?
Last night was good. Last night was good in the sense of I just was able to just get my thoughts together and being able to lay on an actual real bed after so long. Like, that was a blessing right there. And you,
so, oh man, that's amazing. I could talk to you forever. I have a feeling, and I'm hoping, I'm asking, that you, I would love for you to be a reoccurring guest on here now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You could be our in-house, you know, I call everybody on this podcast, I call them Sellies. That's like the nickname. You could be our in-house Selly, our ex-Selly. But no, yes. You just have such a calling beyond it. And I'm just so happy for you. I'm rejoicing with you. I'm so proud of you. Where can people find you?
Instagram, ShawJohn1222. That's ShawJohn1222. And I'm on there. I got my little tags in there. Got the books. You know, that's one of the books I wrote while I was in prison, In God's Presence, for the spiritual journey.
Amen.
So got that. I got,
and that's on Amazon, right?
Yes, all on Amazon. You look up Sean Robert Johnson. I got Saving Souls. That's for the youth mentorship to keep them out of prison and gangs. Yeah. And I got Rise Above. That's motivational inspiration that I wrote. And I got a couple of more. I got one for financial literacy, credit and freedom. I got one called Broken and Breakthrough, Men's Mental Health. And then I started a clothing line, Saving Souls. So that and prison reform is part of that, of why I started that. Saving Souls, helping out kids, helping out so many different aspects of life that I believe souls can be saved if people would just try.
Is it t-shirts? You make t-shirts?
T-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants.
Okay.
So.
Okay, cool. And I mean, what's next for you in the grand spectrum of incarceration reform? Are you thinking on it? Do you know your next move? What's next?
I just want to further along that everything that God blessed me with to start while I was in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now when I'm out here, I can show my face more to do promotional and marketing videos for the brands, for the books, and just contribute every way that I possibly can to change the perspective of how people are viewed that was in my shoes that's in prison.
That's right.
And, you know, I was part of the ministry team in prison. I didn't preach some sermons and I did some Bible study. So I want to further that along. But wherever God used me to be a vessel to do good, I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Oh, I'm so happy for you, friend. What about your podcast?
Thank you. Oh, I'm going to get that start back up.
Yeah.
You know, it's day two. I'm logging back into accounts. I'm setting everything back up. So within the next couple of days, you know, I'm going to start getting everything back in motion.
So that's
that I need
on your horizon to do it again, too.
Absolutely.
Well, it was so funny. I said to you when you messaged me, I said, well, you know, I want you to do the podcast. I said, why don't I give you like a week, you know, get settled in and then we'll record. You were like, no, I could do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I could do it tomorrow.
I was like,
Yeah, I keep the main thing the main thing.
I was trying to just be respectful of your time. And I was like, you have so much to do right now. You said, no, it's fine.
Yeah,
and then I said to you, you know, you have to download this app to this program. It's a whole thing. And I said, you know, I don't know if that's easy or not. I said, do you have an iPhone? You said, yeah, 17. I was like, okay.
Yeah, shout out to my wife, Shannon. She got me the iPhone 17. So you make sure I was good.
Are you guys legally married?
Yes.
And you got legally married while you were incarcerated?
Yes.
You know, that feels like a Valentine's Day special if you ask me on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Okay, now do me a favor. I usually plug my own podcast at the end of each podcast, but will you plug the podcast for me?
Yes, yes. Listen, get on the podcast, Hard Conviction, Nina Good Peoples. Like I said, when we first met, she showed me love and I appreciate even that conversation back then. I could tell she was genuine of everything that she was doing. And it's not surprising that you are doing a podcast because Mike, that was producing a podcast episode, when we got done doing it, I said, yo, she's going to be a star one day. I told him that. I said,
come
she
on.
Got the drive and ambition. She definitely going to be a star one day with everything she's doing.
That means
so definitely follow Nina. Instagram, Nina Palmer. And if you don't know it, I definitely will share it on my Instagram for people to follow too.
Oh, man.
And I appreciate you.
Man, that's good. You know how to make a good plug. Well, I'm going to repost our episode on your podcast too, because that was just like really good. And friend, I'm so happy for you. And
thank you.
You and I have a future ahead of us. We have work to do together, right?
Absolutely.
I think, were we not made to be on the same side of the army?
Yeah. Listen, gotta align you with the right people that he needs you to do his work at the right time.
If you saw right now, okay, I've been talking about the puppies on this podcast and my, for the lack of a better word, journey with them. If you saw what they were doing right now to get at me because they're so annoyed I've been recording, they have climbed up on the table that I'm recording from and they're standing on top of the table trying to get to me because they can't handle me doing one thing besides monitoring their poop schedule. So I was just like, hey, he wants to record. If he can record, I'm gonna make it happen. Normally I try to set up a better scenario for recording, but I would have parted the Red Seas to celebrate your exodus from prison.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, friend. I'm praying for you. I love you. I'm behind you.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Happy release, happy freedom. And I'm so excited to watch God's favor just pour all over you.
Absolutely.
Okay, well,
same for you.
And will you be back on? I need you back on soon. Will you come back on soon?
Just let me know. Just send me a text and let me know whenever you need me.
All right, friend. We're all celebrating for you. Go follow Sean. Thank you for being on. Thank you for listening to the Heart Conviction Podcast. Come back every Monday. Come adopt these puppies from me. I think it's worse than being incarcerated. I'm just kidding. All right, love you, friend.
All right,
bye.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye. God bless.